Hola and welcome to yet another episode of the Radiant Sessions podcast. This is episode 30 and I am your host, Lou Selenia. And if you are new here, welcome. And if you have been riding with me since January or have joined along the way, again, thank you for supporting. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your energy. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for your messages. Thank you for just being who you are. Just being you. I'm so grateful for this experience. And I have some good news to share with you. We, and yes, I say we because I publish this podcast, but this is a relationship and I can't do this without you. We have recently reached 750 downloads since launch. Yeah, thank you. I'm so grateful. I honestly, you know, I did this because it was something that just kept coming around, kept coming in my spirit. And I knew I wanted to reach people, but I really didn't put numbers on it or anything like that. And that's just amazing. And yeah, so let's get into this week's episode. If you listened to last week, Good Girl Gone Bad, and you know, this is gonna, you know, kind of go along with the same thing. I was on TikTok scrolling. You know, I said I was never gonna get on there, but I'm glad I did, because quite frankly, you could be entertained, you can learn a lot, you can, you know, get a lot of tips and tricks and hacks. It's pretty cool, which is also why it's really easy to get sucked in. But this one young lady was talking about people pleasing, and she mentioned a term that I had never heard before. And in true ADHD fashion, now that I know that that's what it is, I hyperfocus, go down the rabbit hole, and want to learn as much as I can on something until I'm satisfied. And so I want to talk about it today. I still fresh in knowledge, but hey, we're learning together. We're doing this together. And in talking about people pleasing, she mentioned something called pathological accommodation. And this term was created by Brandshaft. I believe that's how you say the name. And so pathological accommodation refers to ways of being that function unconsciously to preserve a needed attachment when that bond has been traumatically threatened. In this sense of the word, accommodation means that the individual unconsciously adopts the views and feelings of another at the expense of his or her own experience. And I see and I hear those words and I see those things in so many different ways, because I can see how someone, a child, could adopt pathological accommodation because of an insecure attachment with a parent caregiver. And attachment theory is another thing that I'm, you know, learning a lot about, especially because I'm someone who has struggled with insecure attachment because of abandonment issues, from not having my mother around, you know, the first 3 years of my life up until, you know, like the first grade, and, you know, then intermittently after that, every few years go with my grandparents and go back to her, then, you know, and then not knowing my father and him not knowing he had a daughter. So I don't blame him, but just the impact of not having my father or knowing him up until I was 25. But I also see this in a religious aspect as well, and can see how in a lot of ways what I was taught in church was exactly like, it was almost as if they wanted me to adopt pathological accommodation. Because you think about, like, the set where it says that you unconsciously preserve a needed attachment when that bond has been traumatically threatened. And so much of the gospel, especially growing up, not so much now, not in the same way, but so much of the gospel that was preached back in those days, you know, in the early 80s, 90s, was about going to hell and literally traumatizing people and traumatizing children and literally scaring them half to death about, if you don't do this, if you don't get saved, if you don't live this way, if you don't, as it says, adopt the views and feelings of another at the expense of your experience, then you're going to hell. And so while you're adopting these views and feelings to preserve this attachment that you feel like you need, whether it's because of a parent or parents and how you were raised, and you know, oftentimes that can come from either abandonment like me, or, you know, even if they were there, where they withdraw affection and they withdraw support, and there's like a push and pull where they create this dynamic that you unconsciously, because again, as a child, you are learning by the way that the people around you, the people, your caregivers are teaching you how to love and how to survive. That's, you know, those are, I think, some of the basic lessons that children are learning by the attachments that they are creating with their caregivers, their parents. And I didn't verify this one, but I recently heard that for a child to grow up with a secure attachment, that they really only need like 30 to 40% of their needs met emotionally, which blew my mind, because that seems a lot lower than what I thought it would be, if in fact that is correct. And if it is correct, considering how many of us are walking around with insecure attachments, it's like, well, damn. Like 30%, 30, 40% ain't a lot at all. And y'all couldn't even do that? Now I get it. It's hard to give what you don't have for yourself, but still, damn. But that's why we're here. Because if you don't have it, then you can reparent yourself. I'm reparenting myself. It is possible to undo the work, heal, you know what I mean. And so, yeah, you know, it's like this thing that basically at the core of that child, as I do think that a lot of this happens at the child level, but even if you weren't a child, like even if it was based on religious stuff and how you were taught to adopt these views to maintain this attachment to God, which really isn't necessary, but I know that that's what they teach, that it basically is telling you that you cannot show up as your authentic self. And if it happened as a child, then it means that you are unable to develop your authentic self. You never even had the chance. And so either you didn't learn how to do it, or you did, because maybe you had a better childhood than I did. And I know there are people like that, and I'm grateful that you did. And then maybe at some point later on in your life, you were told that you couldn't be that authentic self in order to be saved. And I don't believe that at all. And I also don't believe that I serve a God that doesn't want me to be my authentic self, because guess what? I was created in divinity. I am divine. You are divine, just as you are. There is nothing you have to do to be loved. You don't have to obey the rules. You don't have to put on the outfit. You don't have to talk the talk. You don't have to do anything that they're telling you to do, whoever they are, to be loved by your Creator. And then I would tell you to look in the mirror and tell yourself that you don't have to do anything more than just exist to love yourself. Because unfortunately, we learn these things externally and we apply them internally. And so we tell ourselves, oh, I'll be lovable when I lose the weight. I'll be lovable when I reach that level in my job. I'll be lovable when I can prove that I'm lovable by getting into a relationship. I will be lovable when I have the house. I will be lovable when my business explodes. I will be lovable. Insert whatever it is that you are consciously or even subconsciously telling yourself you have to do or be in order to be loved. Because essentially that's what the attachment is there for. The attachment is to help you feel safe and secure. And part of that safety and security is feeling loved. And how transformative would it be if we could all just get there? Where we can wake up in the morning and go through our day and operate our lives with the undying knowledge that we are loved and supported by our Creator and by ourselves. Just as a foundation. Not to say that love from other people is not necessary, but as a foundation. What if we knew at the core of who we were that we could be our authentic selves and still be loved? Because newsflash, attention, hear all about it, you can. And you are. Even if you haven't gotten to the place where you can really, really, truly love yourself in a healthy way, God still loves you, just as you are. As the person that maybe no one else knows. As the person that you may not even know. Because that's why I love sensuality. Because I had really, truly gotten to a place in my journey where I was like, wait, do I even know who I'm supposed to be? Who I really want to be? No. Because so much of my upbringing at home and at church, which was a very large part of my life and still is, was teaching me pathological accommodation. Church culture was my home culture. That's how my grandfather ran our household. And in so many words, the message was you being your authentic self is a sin. So I'm going to teach you how to be. So you're not a sinner. So you won't go to hell. So you can be approved of by people. Because at the end of the day, they'll say it was about God, but it really was about other people in the church being able to recognize that you were the same type of Christian they were. Because you followed the same rules. And if you stepped out of line, then nope. You were going to be punished. And they would say it was love because we'd rather punish you on earth so that you're not living in hell in eternal damnation. Talk about traumatic. like I think about it, I'm like, yo, we really telling kids out here about hell and eternal damnation. Like, what? Are you kidding me? This, like, that's wild to me that the childhood version of me had to endure that type of emotional trauma. That I was worried out here about going to hell instead of learning joy and what makes me happy and what about me I like and how to just exist in the world and how to develop my talents, even figure out what my talents are without it being performative or even for somebody else. So Lee Wichman, I believe, or Wichman, and I will have the link to this article in the description of the episode, says that pathological accommodation can manifest in one of three ways. Again, he's talking about the child. The child does not want to lose their bond to their caregiver, learns to sacrifice parts of themselves in order to preserve that bond. Or a child may decide that they will hold fast to their true self at all costs, only to find themselves isolated and alienated from their caretakers. And lastly, some children will go back and forth between the two, enacting an ambivalence in which they play the dutiful, obedient child at times, and then fiercely cling to their own wishes at other times. And that in contrast to a healthy development in which a child is allowed to develop a true self and also maintain a secure positive attachment to one's parents, children who grow up being pathologically accommodating find themselves in a no-win situation, either sacrificing key parts of their true identity or losing their close ties to their parents that are so important to them. I'm going to repeat that last one again, that last sentence. That in contrast to a healthy development in which the child is allowed to develop a true self and also maintain a secure positive attachment to one's parents, children who grow up being pathologically accommodating find themselves in a no-win situation, either sacrificing key parts of their identity or losing their close ties to their parents that are also very important to them. And I, you know, I'm honest with you guys, gals, people. I cried when I read that the first time. That hit me. It perfectly explains so much for me. It's one of the things that sensuality has helped me with, even without even knowing this term. My therapist, I don't remember her ever mentioning pathological accommodation. This is literally the first time. But realizing that this pathological accommodation is more like a state of being. It's not a habit. It's not just something that I can be like, stop being pathologically accommodating. Don't do that anymore. And you just stop. It's a state of being. It's a nervous system kind of thing. Because, again, like, it becomes about, it's about survival. And so you either sacrifice yourself to survive or you rebel against the accommodation that they want you to make and you are isolated. And the way that sensuality helps me in doing this and in reprogramming myself from that pathological accommodation is it helps to regulate my nervous system. I have tools that I can go to when I realize that I am going back into an old state of being where I am people pleasing or I am hiding my authentic self in some way, shape, or form other than people pleasing. And when I have that awareness, I'm able to go into my sensuality to reprogram my nervous system so that I can go back to that situation and operate from a new place. A place where I don't have to feel like I have to sacrifice myself in order to get my needs met. Because I don't. And the more that I do it, the easier it becomes. The easier it gets to not entertain people who would even unconsciously require me to do the things that I was taught to do as a child. And when those patterns start to look way too familiar, I know to put up boundaries if they don't respect that this is me, this is how I show up. This is my authentic self, and if you don't want that, then you just don't get me. Because operating from my sensual self, which again is very controversial in church, because historically, other than shouting and crying and things like that, what we're taught about spirituality and religion in church is so void and so disconnected from our body and our soul in a lot of ways too. Because so much of what we hear is that our flesh and our soul are evil and as opposed to learning about them in a way that would empower us to use to heal our soul and to integrate our body and our soul into our spirit for the type of experience that we were always meant to have. I've said it before, but you know, my Archbishop Raphael Dennis, you know, would say, you know, for years that we were gods in the earth. And to so many people, you know, that is going to really come off as blasphemous. Because how dare you? Who are you to call yourself God? Well, let's see. Jesus, the Son of God, was God in the earth, God in flesh. We are the children of God. We were created in God's image and likeness. Jesus himself said that we would do greater works. And so, no, we are not God Almighty, Supreme Source, Infinite Wisdom. But by virtue of the divinity that has been given to us, our birthright, it's time to start operating in our godness. And by only focusing on our spirit and acting as if this soul and this body that we were given by God is something to be conquered, in the sense that it is the ticket to hell, as opposed to an empowered stance that this flesh will come under subjection and be used by God, that the things that I do with my body are worship. The pleasure that I feel in my body is worship. Everything that I do and I experience is a spiritual experience, because I am a spiritual being. There is no disconnection. I cannot be disconnected. Because the reality is, even if I feel like I'm disconnected, I'm not. It's about awakening the connection that you already have. We no longer have to accommodate other people's views and beliefs at the sacrifice of ourselves. I talked about it before. I'm really big on affirmations. So once you listen to this episode, whatever the time of day or night, as long as you're not driving, once you get into a stable place, I want you to look in the mirror. And I want you to say the following words. I am a God in the earth. Thank you for listening. This is episode 30. As always, make sure you visit www.lisalenia.com. Check out the merchandise if you haven't. Thanks to those who have purchased. Make sure that you leave a comment or an email to radiant@lucelenia.com. And if you haven't already, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review and let people know how this is impacting you so more people can find us and join the community. I love you. Until next week, be radiant.